Three, two, one. Welcome to the Noisecast. I am back. It's Alberto, and I'm once again joined with my buddy Paul. Paul, say hi to the people.
Hey, everyone.
And this is the Noisecast. Just a quick matter of housekeeping. The January episode is in the process of being restored. Long story short, I had to replace a hard drive in my Mac, and yeah, so that's where we're restoring some of that data. Paul, what's going on with you, man?
It's been a nightmare at work, but recording with you makes everything better.
Awesome, man. It's always good to hang out with you. But yeah, so, you know, we're back. It's March. We missed February, but I think we're going to make up for it by doing a double dose in March. You down for that?
I am more than down for that. There's a lot going on to talk about in the tech sphere, and there was a butt ton to talk about.
Yeah, man. There's a lot. So let's just jump right into it. So initially, when we were prepping the show notes and getting this show ready for recording, we were going to initially talk about how that kid went to Congress and basically, you know, snitched on his mom and said, you know, like, mom gets all her anti-vax info from Facebook. But in the span of a week, it appears that Facebook has not gotten away from getting some they're just getting beat up, honestly. Like, it's just bad at this point.
Facebook is just getting knocked from left to right, like the Fallon in the boxing ring example. They got the anti-vax stuff. They've got Elizabeth Warren talking about breaking them up. Yesterday they had that gigantic outage,
and then that they say was scheduled maintenance, no less, in the middle of the day.
It's scheduled maintenance that they told literally nobody about, and that affected all of their users. That doesn't seem quite right to me.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of bullshit, quite frankly. You know, it just kind of like for a little like perspective, I am a social media manager in my 9-to-5. And let me tell you, I had to field many, many angry calls about why aren't things showing up and people not understanding that Facebook was completely down, you know. Just using some of these like social media tools like Sprout and Hootsuite, all I kept seeing were like the little red warning marks popping up all over the place. It was not a fun time to work in the social media space.
Well, it's because Facebook itself wasn't down. The site itself was still loading. It threw me off. I thought I got thrown in Facebook jail or something until a few hours later when reports came out that it was happening to everybody.
Yeah, and I think, you know, like that's I think one of the I think that's one of the main issues that affected users. I'm just very curious that, you know, the day after, you know, this mysterious scheduled maintenance issue that popped up, you see, you know, two of their top CEOs leaving the company. So Chris Cox, product officer for Facebook. He was in charge of the WhatsApp app, a little redundant, Messenger and Instagram. And it looks like, nope, gone. And like a lot of people were speculating that he would be like the next in line to Mark Zuckerberg. So, you know, for like the guy that they were, prepping and priming to be the next chief officer to just up and walk away is not a good look.
It's not a good look for Facebook at all, because I know they're now the subject of another federal investigation because of their secret data sharing deals.
Yeah, it's, you know, that news came out yesterday, like while everybody was complaining that they weren't able to be an Instagram model or Instagram photographer, federal prosecutors just hit them with like they had a grand jury essentially, you know, okay, moving forward with this investigation. And there are at least two prominent smartphone manufacturers who are being subpoenaed. So, you know, they didn't say who. Obviously, this is all pretty hush-hush until the full investigation comes out. but it is not looking good for Facebook and like their data dealings.
And then there was the, I know there's also the talk of Elizabeth Warren talking about breaking up Facebook and then Amazon and Google and the other tech giants just because of the amount of control they have. Because truthfully, just thinking about the amount of control Facebook has over my daily life is astounding.
Yeah.
Because Facebook is my primary means of communication. My wife and even my colleagues at work, we have group chats and everything. So mm-hmm. when Facebook went down yesterday, it was like radio silence.
Yeah. Sorry. That's me dropping stuff. Yeah. So I totally agree. Like it's just to kind of give you a little, I guess, a taste of what my day-to-day looks like. To talk with my family members, like my mom is WhatsApp. You know, my younger cousins are like Snapchat. My personal, I guess, platform of choice these days is Instagram, even if I'm not posting it as often. And basically, it's just, and of course, work managing Facebook pages, you know, literally like my entire like digital life was on hold for 5 to 6 hours. You know, it's a little harrowing because not because I miss the ability to post my status or throw up a picture or a meme or whatever, but just because I didn't realize just how much in the web I was. I think most people are kind of tied in like Facebook's web or even Google's web. I'm pretty sure if Google services goes down for a day, I wouldn't be surprised if like half the world stopped.
That's why I think people are being naive when talking about walk away. Like if you don't like Facebook, just walk away from it.
I think that betrays
the nature of the world in which we live now. Like, because by walking away, you're walking away from the primary communication method for the vast majority of people our age.
Yeah, and I think it goes even beyond our age. You know, you're seeing more and more businesses relying on these kind of like Facebook services. I know I've seen more and more things where, you know, you can check, you know, you can log into a payment wallet by clicking, you know, the one button sign in that they usually tie to like a Facebook account or a Google account. You know, I know on the retailer side that there's a lot of that happening now too. You know, integrating certain like chat software. I know Facebook Messenger is a big part. Like the customer service for one of the companies I do social media for. So, you know, it's not just for fooling around. It's not just a matter of, like you said, turn it off, walking away. I think now we're seeing that we have maybe an overdependence on these, you know, media platforms. And kind of going back to the comments that Elizabeth Warren said about breaking up these tech companies, I think it's time we start really, really looking into it. I know I just said platforms, but the reality is that a lot of these quote unquote platforms operate more like television networks. The only difference is that they're not under the kind of scrutiny and regulation that, say, NBC or CBS would be. And I think that's, you know, where we run into some serious, serious problems.
I think comparing them to television networks is even betraying their strength. They're more comparable to, if you want to compare them to anyone, compare them to the monolith that is Disney, just with the amount of stuff that Disney controls, the amount of pots Disney had their fingers in.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, they're kind of like, it's, they really, like, you know, I think when they broke up certain things, like when they broke up the telephone companies, I think they were afraid of what essentially Facebook and Google have become. Amazon to a certain extent as well. You know, I think about like Facebook, for example, you know, 5 hours, at least, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, at least 4, maybe 5 communication services were essentially down. Could you imagine if, you know, we woke up tomorrow morning and nobody could get a phone signal up, whether landline or mobile? Like, that's kind of like where we're headed. And I think, you know, we have to start curbing the kind of influence that these companies have, you know, and it can't be just a simple restructuring and, you know, doing what Google did when they became Alphabet. I think, you know, you have to separate Google from YouTube. You have to separate Facebook from WhatsApp. You know, there's a, you know, probably more so Instagram, but I really feel like WhatsApp is going to be like the next big thing. So definitely like separating Facebook from WhatsApp and Instagram would probably be the way to go about doing that.
And even Facebook Messenger, I know many people that use Facebook Messenger that aren't even active on Facebook as a whole.
Right. It's one of those things where it might be a little bit too late to just say, okay, you know what? Well, if you don't like it, just don't use the service. I think we've passed that, long past that point. And we really have to like start thinking about how do we regulate it rather than, you know, stick our heads in the sand and say, oh, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. So let's not do anything about it. Let's let them do what they're going to do. That's my two cents.
Admittedly, I don't know what to do about it. I don't know what regulations to put in place to curb Facebook and curb Google's ever-expanding growth. But I do know that saying, hey, because we don't know what to do, we shouldn't do anything, is not the answer.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, the first thing is just really find out how interconnected these companies are, right? So, you know, we can lie to ourselves and say, oh, well, you know, Facebook is well, what's the big lie that Zuckerberg likes to kind of throw out? It's like, oh, well, you know, we own all these companies, but people are better for it because they use our technology, but they have their own, they can basically manage themselves. We know that's bullshit.
And for the longest time, Zuckerberg was constantly saying, we value your privacy.
I think he says that the same way like alcoholics say, I know when I've had too much.
Yeah.
So I'm not really going to hang my hat on that.
Well, that's what I was saying is that's the ultimate in double speak.
Like. Yeah, it's just like, come on, like, bro, let's not even do that. You're not fooling anybody with that.
And one of the real dangers of Facebook growth has been I know I'm guilty of it too, so I'm going to acknowledge that up front, is in the echo chambers it creates. I know those constantly talk of that, but we're seeing it more and more with the rise of some of the extremist views on from right-wing people like the Proud Boys, and we've seen it a lot recently with the rise of the anti-vaxxers again.
Oh yeah, for sure. That's the problem when, again, you know, that in my opinion, I feel like this is where the television network, you know, kind of parallel works, because television networks have somebody who's in charge of making sure that what they show has a certain standard. You know, they sit there and they have, you know, like you can't curse on. You know, over the air TV, right? You're not going to see someone drop an F-bomb, you know, during 60 Minutes. And even when you talk about 60 Minutes and even local, local news stations, someone has to make, or a group of someones have to make an editorial call and say, we are going to cover the news with this slant or that slant. You know, it's going to be, it's mostly unbiased, but everybody has a slant, but they make a call. They say, we're going to go up to this point. Facebook is trying to enjoy the benefits of being that media network without having the responsibilities of making judgment calls. And, you know, that's the definition of having your cake and eating it too. You know,
it's like by refusing to make judgment calls in some of these situations, they are simultaneously making a judgment call. You can't just wash your hands of some of these things and be like, well, not our problem.
When, oh, yeah, definitely. Certain
things are so dangerous to, frankly, humanity as a whole.
Yeah, I think and this goes back like, you know, last year. I forget where it was. But essentially it was in another country, and they started a hoax about one group going out and, you know, Supposedly they saw a video of a woman being dragged and beaten and killed in the street. And so it started a very real riot, like a mini coup. And that's fucking not only that, that's terrifying. You know, we're you know, we like to say, oh, well, we're not like these countries, but you know, we're not that far. And not for anything, when you see someone like the vitriol that goes back and forth on some of the most basic shit, like, for example, Captain Marvel was a good movie. No, the fuck it's not. It's just like, they should have had more men in it. It's just like, we're not far from, you know, from allowing like these Facebook echo chambers, like for literally driving ourselves like mad.
I know I've created an echo chamber, kind of created an echo chamber for myself, just because sometimes I will hide people that are frankly awful. Like, I'm not going to deny it. These people, like, I have some conservative friends, but I also have some conservative friends that are just like, no, you're the fucking worst.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, look, I don't, I'm not going to lie and say that any one viewpoint is 100% correct. That's just not how life is. I think you and I are both fairly left-leaning. But at the same time, like, you know, what people fail to realize that a lot of the anti-vaxxer community are kind of like the extreme left. And then you have like, you know, your gun nuts on the right. And, you know, we can say how they're so different, but they're not. They're essentially the same group of people with a different hangup.
What I find interesting about the anti-vaxxers, though, is it is an extreme left movement, but it's also an extreme right movement. Because, again, some of the people that I personally know that homeschool their children because of religious reasons and all that crap,
mm-hmm.
because they don't want the public school to indoctrinate their kids, are the same people that are anti-vaxxers.
Yeah, it's funny. Anyone who ever tells me that they don't want to do something because they don't want to indoctrinate somebody are usually the ones doing the indoctrinating.
Which, interestingly enough, perfectly highlights the reason I left the church. But that is not something we talk about on the Noisecast. I'm just going to stop.
Yeah, we're not. Look, I'm not here to indoctrinate no one. But you know, speaking of Captain Marvel, first of all, big it up to them. 153 million domestic over the opening weekend.
It's up to 455 worldwide. I looked at it today.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet. I know we were talking about it. Have you seen it yet?
I'm going Saturday. I'm actually disappointed in myself. This is the first MCU film I haven't seen opening weekend. Like, I'm slacking off. This is 19 movies in, and this the first one I didn't see opening weekend. I am disappointed in myself.
I have to ask, you got your Endgame tickets yet?
I don't think they're on sale yet. If they were on sale, then totally. But I don't think they're on sale.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think I've seen something for the Alamo.
But they generally go out 30 days in advance. Its release date is the 26th.
So okay, so there's still some time. We got a month.
Yeah, it should go on sale probably about the time of my birthday. So thank you for the birthday gift, Disney.
Awesome. Yeah, so, you know, Captain Marvel had a great opening despite people trying to game Rotten Tomatoes, you know, when the trailer was out. And I got to be honest, I've only seen one trailer by accident. I've been pretty good in not looking at any of the MCU trailers.
Good call.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm excited. Like, I got to see the one where she punched the Skrull in the face. You know, I'm like, yeah, I kind of want to see that.
Said the old lady.
Yeah, the old lady. That thing kind of made me chuckle. So I was just like, yeah, all right, I'm down for this one.
I know the new Avengers Endgame trailer dropped today, and every one of my friends have been talking about that. I've been having to actively avoid it. Like, I feel like Muhammad Ali trying to dodge these boxing blows.
You know what? I once I saw that that's what people were talking about, I literally turned off Facebook. I don't have it on my phone, so that's a good thing. Twitter, I uninstalled Twitter for the day. So yeah, I'm like active. I'm not trying to watch anything until I get there. So
I 100% agree. The people that eat, I don't understand these people that eat up all the trailers and the TV spots and the featurettes and everything. It's like, just wait and watch the movie, people.
You know, it's funny because I remember a time where, like, you didn't have access to the trailers except for when, like, a commercial came on TV. And, you know, that was it. You had, like, a 30-second spot, and you were good. You made your decision. And sometimes you didn't make the right call, but, you know, you sucked it up and you went with it.
That's still what I try to do. I would generally watch the first official trailer. Then after that, I go on a blackout. Like, I don't need any more information about the movie.
Yeah. It's tough, man. It really is tough. But talking about
the MCU, though, I'm just disappointed in a lot of these fans. I love things. I love Star Wars. I love Rick and Morty. I love the MCU, but these fans are starting to ruin it for me.
Yeah. You know what's the best and worst thing about anything are the fans. Without a doubt.
Like, I understand that it's such a large fan base and it's such a small percentage of them that are awful, that are fucking awful, but they're just so loud.
You know, and it goes back to, like, the echo chamber conversation. So, you know, I know I tend to follow a lot of people because of various geekdoms. And it's cool for the most part, but then people can be absolute shit. I think, and really, you know what, when I've noticed it the most, I've noticed it around the release of Black Panther and around the announcement of Captain Marvel. Maybe I'm wrong and maybe you've seen something different, but that's really where I've seen people, like, you know, raise up their hands and be like, he's like, oh, but that's not what the movie's about, and that's not what it should be about, and you shouldn't be doing things like this. It's just like, you know what? You know, quit your whining. It's and just
the
like
the people saying that are the people that don't necessarily realize the importance of it. I don't want to get on my soapbox, but a lot of these white males don't necessarily, myself included, I am a white male, don't always understand the importance of representation. People seeing people that look like them on screen.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, what really gets to me is people seem to lose their shit over something that's generally speaking, it's pretend, right? You know, there is no real Captain Marvel. There is no Nick Fury. There is no Captain America.
Which makes me happy because I would not want to live in that universe.
Jesus, that would be terrible, wouldn't it? Could you imagine?
It would. Like, just, here's this week, Incredible Hulk's ripping through Atlanta, driving to work.
You know, like, nobody would live in New York City.
Like, no, they wouldn't. Think about those insurance premiums in any major city.
You know, after we're going a little on a tangent here, but do you remember after the first Avengers movie, someone actually wrote an article about what the insurance bill would be after the Avengers ripped through, like, Grand Central.
You're talking about the Battle of New York? Yes.
Yeah.
I do remember seeing that. I can't remember the total.
It was insane. It was insane. It was like the three largest natural disasters times 10 or something like that. It was insane. So if that were New York, it's kind of like, I know you recently finished playing Spider-Man for the PlayStation 4.
I did. That game was incredible. You need to play it. Everybody needs to play it. It was incredible.
I finished the story. I'm still trying to beat Taskmaster. I'm also not as good at video games as I once was. But that aside, if New York was like that, no one would want to live here.
No. Like, that turned full dystopia in the last act.
It was bonkers. It was absolute. But you know what? It was like playing through a comic book, and I loved it.
And that was that wasn't just a great video game. That was actually a great Spider-Man story. Like, I was actually engrossed in that story.
So someone told me that essentially that's pretty much straight from the comic book. So I don't know. I've slacked off on comics for a while. So I would love to go back and read that. So if anyone can, you know, let us know which comic book arc that was and which books we got to follow, let me know, because I will definitely like download them on the app and take a look.
100%. And I'm so excited for the inevitable sequel. There is zero chance a sequel is not happening, and I am here for it.
Pretty much. You know what, though? Like, so here's what I found out. I found out that Asylum Games has the rights to the entire Marvel universe.
Asylum? You talking about Insomniac?
Insomniac. Sorry. Insomniac Games. That's my bad. But yeah, they have the rights to the entire Marvel universe. All the comic books. So think about, you know, what we saw there. Like, you know, we saw like the Avengers Tower. Could you imagine if they like incorporated like the Avengers into the Spider-Man world?
You know, honestly, I would be less interested in that. Spider-Man is the best street-focused neighborhood superhero. Anything else, I think, would get to the point where it gets too grand in scale for you to really appreciate,
Yeah, that's true. I can see that. You know what, though? Like, I just, like, I would love to see, like, a great X-Men game. You know, like, I don't know if you remember the old arcade beat-em-up.
I do.
You know, like something like that, something on that level. There just was like
also a game called Wildcats. I'm probably never heard of it, but it felt a lot like a good X-Men game, and I loved it.
Oh, gotta check that out. I will definitely look that up.
It was Super Nintendo.
Okay. Super Nintendo had some gems, so I believe that. I definitely believe
about
that.
The future and talking about like dystopian things. Mm-hmm. How soon do you see self-driving cars? Like you personally, not asking like what you think the experts say. I'm talking about you.
50 years, you know, and that's being very optimistic. The reason for that is because making the car smart is one thing, making the cities and roads that they drive on is another. So you know, we like to think that the car is going to figure it out by itself, but like it doesn't work that way. It would be like creating an entire new transportation infrastructure. A smart car is only as smart as the road that it's on or the operator behind the wheel. And if we're talking about true driverless cars, then we need to upgrade our cities and highways. Like, there's no other way to do it.
I agree. In order for widespread adoption, I'm thinking we'll start seeing it in 15 to 20 years, though. We will start seeing them. Like, they will be the more localized cases only in certain cities, like with, like for example, Honda's hydrogen powered car. Mm-hmm. I kind of put them in the same level as I put that, because that's been available for years now, but it's been only available in like two cities. And
yeah, because you have to jump
through a lot of hoops to buy it and all that.
Yeah, I mean, think of it this way, like. Let's say you have driverless cars. More than likely, you're going to want to do something where it's easy for them. Because if there's no driver, that means that there's no fuel, right? So they have to go somewhere to refuel. More than likely, they're going to go with electric, because you know these are going to be fleet vehicles. If you go fully driverless, no one owns a car anymore. You know, it would be like owning a horse. You have people who own horses, but you don't see them on the street. So it's kind of like the same idea. Like only like the mega rich will buy a car. Everyone else would kind of get into like essentially Uber, right? Mm-hmm. You get a car on demand. It comes to your door. It picks you up, drops you off. You never think about it again.
Obligatory book Uber. I'm sorry.
Yeah, definitely. But you know, that's essentially how that would work, right? Like they would be fleet vehicles. You know, a driverless car you don't think about a car in the same way. Like it's not like how you have bucket seats and you're by the steering wheel and you have all these like tactile controls. They start to look more like buses and trains. You know, they're optimized to fit more people in there. Versus, you know, driving you around more comfortably. Then you have, so you need somewhere for them to essentially park, to refuel. Easiest way to do that would be to do some sort of like electric vehicle. So you can't have all electric vehicles without having, you know, either extended range batteries, which you can only extend a battery so long, or the infrastructure for them to refuel on the road. So if you, if you're refueling on the road, then again, you know, you need to create gas stations, right? They just won't be serving up gas. They'll be plugging in, you know, bigger buses. So it's that's why it's 50 years on the short end.
Yeah, like I can definitely see why. Another thing I was thinking about was just the mindset. Just talking to other people, even people our age, people mm-hmm. are so accustomed to driving with such a individualist culture.
Mm-hmm.
It would take a complete change in mindset before people even accept driverless cars as the majority. And even then, I don't think they will reach 100% adoption just due to some people's individual.
Yep. I definitely agree with you there. I think you're starting, like, I think the next two generations are going to be the ones that, like, will have that, make that call. I think there requires still a lot of governmental help before we get there. You know, again, like, our infrastructure, you know, objectively speaking, sucks. You know, I know there are roads on the BQE that, you know, you could mistake them for a third world country because it's like running over gravel.
That's every single city. The problem with infrastructure is it's necessary, first off, but politicians don't care about maintaining it. You don't get your picture in the newspaper for, hey, this person maintained this interstate successfully for the next 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
You get it in there for building new infrastructure, for taking things above and beyond.
Yeah, definitely.
But it still has to be maintained, and no one really cares because, again, it doesn't get the picture in the paper.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's kind of like why, you know, and again, not to go on too much of a tangent, but it's kind of why Bill de Blasio and Governor Cuomo are out here, you know, basically begging Amazon for them to come back. It's like, not because, you know, those jobs are magically created. It's because, you know, like, it's not because they actually did the work of building up Long Island City. They want somebody to just kind of come in and drop, you know, a promise of however many thousands of jobs. It makes them look good. It makes a great photo op, and they get to say, hey, when I'm running for president, I did this. You know, it doesn't mean that it fixes anything or it helps anyone. It's a photo op.
And by the time it inevitably fails, then they're so far removed from it that it doesn't really matter to them.
Yeah, pretty much. They're gone. Like, it's, you know, like, the fallout's going to happen 15, 20 years down the line. 15, 20 years from now, they're either White House bound or, you know, well off enough where they don't have to worry about it. So, yeah, it's just like, it's somebody else's problem. You know, and since you mentioned you know, like, driverless cars, there was a really interesting interview that happened last week. For those that don't know, you know, The Breakfast Club, it's a urban radio morning show. They had presidential hopeful Andrew Yang. He's a, you know, basically he's a VC, very successful one at that. And he wants to run for president. Unlike other millionaires that want to become presidents, I feel he's smart enough to know that this is a two-party system. So he's trying to go under the Democratic ticket. If he doesn't make it, he promises to not run as an independent. And yes, I am throwing a lot of shade at the Starbucks, not billionaire, but rather person of means, Howard Schultz. And we say that very sarcastically here, by the way. You know, but anyway, so he was talking about how the biggest problem that faces the U.S. is not, it's not the Russians, it's not Facebook, it's not Trump, it's the unpreparedness that we have towards the automation of work. So his platform is basically bringing universal basic income to all Americans and to prepare for the inevitable takeover of the machines. Basically, a robot is going to be doing your job in the next 5 to 10 years, according to him.
You know what? I'm socialist. I kind of identify as a democratic socialist. And even to me, this guy is bananas.
Which part?
Well, first off, here's this guy running for president. No policy experience. And his entire platform is based around one thing. Like, yeah. Even Donald Trump, when on his campaign, he did have more than build the wall. Of course, build the wall is what he was known for, but he talked about plans for defeating ISIS, which was a load of shit. He talked about all this other stuff that was a load of shit, but he at least talked about it. Andrew Yang so far has been nothing but a one-horse pony.
Yeah.
A one-trick pony. That's what I was trying to say. I'm sorry.
I got you. See, I was going to let it go because I didn't notice it. So, you know, there we go. But, I totally agree. I think, you know, I think universal basic income is something that we have to really consider in the future.
I'm 100% with him on universal basic income. I'm not trying to decry that. I'm just talking about his presidential aspirations.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, like this whole thing. It's kind of like he's fear-mongering in the same way that Donald Trump was. Like, you know, kind of like, if you're a miner, you know, you don't have to learn a new skill. You're going to be mining forever. It's like, no, that's a lie. But this at the other extreme, it's just like, you know, as good as – what was that Google Assistant that they launched last year? It had one of those, like,
Lens?
So techie names. Oh, Duplex? God. That's the one. So, you know, Google Duplex was supposed to, like, you know, roll out and it's going to replace administrative staff in most offices, right? But that's not going to happen. At the end of the day, it's not going to happen.
At the end of the day, it's a useful tool because Google Duplex has rolled out. I have it on my Pixel or some form of it on my Pixel.
Mm-hmm.
And it is kind of cool. Like, it's great call screening. It's a remarkable technology, but the idea that it's going to take anyone's job anytime soon is frankly laughable.
Yeah, it's. I think he, and again, coming from the VC world, maybe he hears a lot of like crazy out there pitches, and he might know of some potential technology that's going to like really wow us in the next 5 years. Is it going to close 30% of malls like he believes? No. Malls, you know, it's funny because malls are actually seeing a resurgence, but not as the traditional place to go to shop.
30% of the traditional malls are already on their way out. Malls have morphed. They've become something else.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what they're supposed to do. Like, you know, realistically, that's kind of how markets work, right? When the car was new technology, it didn't replace the horse in 5 years. So, you know, it's the same thing. It's not anything that we haven't seen. I think that what happens with a lot of people in the tech space is that, you know, they lose touch with history. They think that they're making history, not realizing that, you know, it's just kind of a cyclical thing. It's just a new medium.
One of the examples I like to use with the automation fear-mongering is the ATM. When the ATM was proposed, a lot of people were protesting it because they was talking about how tellers would be out of a job.
Mm-hmm.
And that was proven to be not only incorrect, the opposite has been true. Like, correct. ATMs do perform basic functions, which allow the tellers to provide more functions, to do more than they originally could.
Right, right. And I mean, that's what we're going to see. Like, we're going to see a lot of the same. Yes, some jobs are going to go. It's true that, you know, when cars took over, the blacksmith lost his job because the blacksmith was no longer, making shoes for horses. You know, but other jobs came about from it. You know, new trades were invented because of it. Now, we're going to see the same thing.
I do agree with Andrew Yang in the more distant future. As we see the rise of human-level AI, there will be a lot of jobs that, frankly, aren't necessary anymore. But yeah, that is not in the next 5-10 years. That is decades.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Like that. I mean, he's right in that it is coming, and that we are going to see a monumental shift in the way we work. But it won't be me or you seeing that shift. It will be potentially our children.
And by then, you know, like there's going to be a more clear path for them, you know, on how they're going to essentially make a living and you know, do all the things that we're doing now. You know, it's not going to be any different. I hope it's different. I hope that a lot of things aren't the same. I hope that, you know, this whole idea of single-payer insurance really takes off. You know, I don't mind paying more in taxes if it means that I don't have to worry about where my health insurance comes from.
I don't mind more than paying more in taxes if it means my neighbor doesn't have to worry about where it comes from.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm a Medicaid baby. I was only born solely because of the state. Without federally funded welfare, I would not be here. So I've always been very drawn to that. Anytime there's talk of cutting Medicaid, I actually take it personally.
Yeah, and you know, you're not the only person. You know, you're not the only one. So, I mean, you know, yeah, the rise of machines is going to happen. I don't think it's going to be to, you know, this huge detriment that everyone wants to make it out to be. I think everybody needs to like calm down and take a step back. But I'm glad that he is bringing up. He's putting it out, I guess, in a more mainstream form, right? So, you know, we have the benefit of being big tech heads and we love to talk about this stuff. But, you know, I think about like my parents or even some of my coworkers, they could care less. You know, it's just like, oh, well, whatever. It's like they know the new iPhone, they knew the new Samsung phone. But anything beyond that, it's just like, well, you know, it's a little bit too abstract. So I think, you know, having more people out here talking about these things and just like really letting people know, it's like, oh, this is something we do have to think about. I think that's a net positive.
Single payer needs to come. I'm sorry, I'm still thinking about that. Like the fact that
no, go for it, man. And
the fact that our Congress is actively working against the Americans right now, it just pisses me off. Like, I never thought. I guess I wasn't as aware of it, but looking back, it's apparently always been like this.
Mm-hmm.
Like looking back to Reagan, looking back to Nixon, looking back to Bush Senior, even Clinton, a lot of his policies. Or
oh, frankly, Clinton was. I'm sorry.
This idea that only now the government has started actively working against the people is preposterous. It's just now it's never been this obvious before.
Oh yeah, it's I've never seen it like so blatant. But at the same time, you know, so it's funny. So what was it? I think like the history of like single payer starts in like FDR, the New Deal. And basically doctors were against it and they said, hey, you guys are like taking money out my pocket. And this is like before, you know, you had like these big conglomerate of like health institutions. Like I know over here, you know, you have like basically one of three, you know, hospital options, NYU, what used to be a Long Island Jewish hospital, and another group called Medisys. You know,
we have Wellstar. Like we have a ton of Wellstar hospitals down here.
Yes, you know, like, but you know, that in itself, I think, is a problem because it's just like there is no real competition, right? The whole idea of what supposedly drives prices and increases service is competition, but if everybody's essentially owned by one or two companies, like there's no real competition. So But yeah, so essentially, like, it's health, that health, whole idea.
Healthcare has basically turned into a government-sponsored oligopoly. I think that's how
you put it. Definitely. Definitely. So, you know, I mean, you know, it's just like, as far as single payer goes, though, absolutely, I am all for it. I think we have, I think, like, the social contract is as follows, right? You're Walmart and you're able to be Walmart because somebody made sure that the police are paid so that no one can go and just like randomly ransack your stores, empty your, you know, go break into your home and, you know, snatch the jewels and your cash. And you know, like if something were to go down, you can call somebody. So like, ultimately that's the same idea. Like we need to have that same reverence for things that, no, rather we should have the same reverence for health and other people's well-being that we have for things. And ultimately, like once we can balance that out, I think everybody will see, like, it's not, you know, ooh, some horrible socialism thing. I think it's more about making sure that we're taking care of one another so that we can kind of progress, like not just socially, but economically as well.
It would allow us to progress economically. That's one of the big lies, is that it would hold us back. If people were less concerned about healthcare, where the healthcare is coming from, more people would start businesses. We would see a boom.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you don't know. I honestly, the next, like, you know, it's funny. Everybody talks about like the next Steve Jobs, right? But the next Steve Jobs right now, you know, needs to go to the doctor and they don't know how to because they don't have health insurance. And, you know, that's something that people really need to get through their heads.
Companies like Amazon and Walmart, I say that as a Walmart employee, deserve to be shamed for having the government subsidize their low wages.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because the people receiving the government subsidies are the ones being shamed, not the companies forcing them to.
Right. Right. No, I totally agree, man. So, you know, we had a little show here. I'm not going to end it on a down note. I do have to say there were some good things. We have some stuff to look forward to. We got, you're going to check out Captain Marvel this weekend.
Yeah, I'm going to check it out Saturday.
Nice. So you got that going on. I know I've been, the weather's finally getting nice, and that means I'm actually going out and shooting more. I'm still, you know, a photographer, so I'm still having, you know, a lot of fun doing that. And
as a fan of yours, where do you post most of your shots? Is it Instagram, or where else do you go? Where else do you post them?
You know, mostly it's Instagram. Like I've been shooting a lot more film. So that's why like my Instagram like slowed down a lot. And you know what, I'm gonna put it out there. So if anyone is listening and, you know, is in the New York City area and knows how to develop film and wants to teach me, I would be so happy to learn. because that would probably cut down some of the costs and the delay in me, you know, getting my photos up there.
Okay, I was asking because I'd noticed your Instagram has slowed down as a fan, and I was like, mm-hmm. I wonder what happened. I wonder if he hasn't been shooting or what's going on.
No, just been shooting film. I got like 4 rolls of film that I have to like develop. I got 2 that went out for developing last week. I've just been busy and I haven't had a chance to you know, go out and pick those up. But yeah, like, you know, I'm still shooting. I'm still doing it. Not as frequently. I've been a little busier these days. But you know, like I'm out and about shooting whenever I can. And like I said, like, you know, we're finally not in negative degree temperatures, so it's a lot easier to get out there.
I don't know how you people survive in that anyway. If Atlanta ever got in negative anything, the city would just die. Like the entire city would just stop.
Yo, no joke, no exaggeration. My wife was traveling in Texas a couple weeks back, and I think the low in Dallas was mid to upper 30s. And the airport had a problem because they were understaffed. Everyone called out.
The lowest we got in my area this year was like 20. And even then, like nobody on the way, my way to work that day, you saw like nobody on the roads. It was eerie.
It's like, you know, the one day Atlanta had no traffic.
Exactly.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you know, like, so the weather's starting to look nice. You know, I can't lie and say that I've gotten over the whole daylight savings ending, because like I'm still a hot mess. I can't even wake up in the morning anymore. So,
you know, actually I did say that. I'm actually agree with Marco Rubio on something. It may be going through the House soon. He proposed a bill to make daylight savings time last all year. And that would be
perfect.
That would be okay with that.
I'm perfectly okay with that.
Yeah.
Because just keep it one way. Whether it's this way or the 1 hour back, I really don't care. Let's just keep it one way. Like the people in Arizona got one thing right. Sorry, Arizona.
I still think that's about the only thing they got right, though. Because I've been in Arizona approximately one time in my entire life, and I never want. I have no desire to go back. I was in Phoenix, and it was a low day, and I think it was 108.
Yeah, no, I can't do that. I can't do that.
Yeah.
Oh man, that sounds terrible.
It was the worst.
That sounds horrible, man. All right, so look, we got some things to look forward to. I'm gonna make a point, and I promise everyone going forward, I'm gonna make sure to end every single episode with one good news story. How's that? We got a deal?
I have a good news story.
Go for it.
I got above standard on my evaluation at work.
There you go. I will take that one, and you know what? We're going to definitely celebrate that. So congrats to you, Paul, man. I really appreciate you taking the time. As we send it off, let everybody know where they can find you.
I'm on Twitter at Combs Paul. That's the best place to find me for all my movie opinions and random rants.
Awesome. And everyone, thank you for joining us for this episode of the Noisecast. As always, you can find me on Twitter at @Al_Writes, WRITE. You can also follow us at Noisecast on Twitter. And you can find us at The Noisecast on Facebook and Podbean. So make sure to subscribe, make sure to tell a friend. And, you know, we're always looking to hear your feedback. So let us know what you guys think. And we will see you in a couple weeks. Thanks again, Paul. Thanks, everybody, for listening.